the crux of it is the difference between a community and a business, a community and a company. And I think that trying to build both at the same time is incredibly difficult. And I don't think you necessarily need to do both at the same time. You can build a community without trying to build a profitable business. And that's kind of what we're trying to do now. Examples of that are punks, toads, cryptodes, you know, a great community. There's no business. They're not trying to create revenue. It's just vibes, exclamation mark vibes, right? That's a great community. And I think that too many people, myself included, for most of the last 2 years, said, all right, we've sold some NFTs, we've released NFTs, we've got a bunch of people. Now what? Let's build something. Let's create something. And then it was trying to figure out what that was. And that ended up, you know, shiny ball syndrome in too many directions. And realizing at the end of the day that I really just want to focus on the community, and we don't need a big profitable business flywheel machine, because if you have the right community, if you're doing it right, the community members will be active. They'll want to help each other out. They'll show up every day, and everyone then is like helping each other. And that's, to me, the ultimate type of community. On the flip side, if you're trying to build a company, you probably don't need NFTs. Like, I think that the reality is that most people launch without really thinking it through, especially in this age of royalties being extremely difficult to enforce and all that kind of stuff. So I think people should think long and hard about whether they want to like build a company. You can always add the NFT part later or the token part later. And then there's the very, 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 like a very small percentage of projects that do manage to do both. Pudgy Penguins is probably the best shiny example of that, I think, where they've got NFTs, they've got the IP, they've got a community, and they've built a sustainable business out of it, because the IP is so cute, and they're just gold standard. But it's the vast minority. So I think that it really is the exception rather than the rule to be able to build a community and a company at the same time.
Welcome to Zero Rights Reserved, a podcast about nouns, DAOs, Ethereum, NFTs, and more. I'm your host, Tody Hawk. My co-host today is Prof. Werder, a.k.a. the Nounish Professor, freshly home from a whirlwind trip at Art Basel. Our guest today is Roy, but you might know him better as Zeneca, founder of Zen Academy, co-host of the Two Bored Apes podcast, and overall just beloved educator of the NFT space. Welcome to Zero Pod, Roy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here and chat all things. So much to chat about.
All things. Nouns are people, places, and things. So we always like to start with the people and work our way down. So we'd love to hear a little bit. We'd love to hear a little bit about your personal journey for maybe people who haven't heard your story, or maybe they don't know how you even got into this space in the first place. Can you give us a little bit of an origin story?
Yeah, for sure. So before this whole space, I was a professional poker player, which that was basically all I did like professionally prior to crypto and Web3. So finishing high school in 2005, already started playing poker a little bit then. 2006, went to university, you know, was playing poker at the same time. Obviously, poker way more fun, and I was able to make money. So university, I kind of dropped out of, went down the poker route, and 15 years later, got into crypto. So I first heard about Bitcoin back in, I think, like 2011, very early, but because poker players were playing online poker on a Bitcoin poker site back then. Unfortunately, right. I didn't buy any, get involved or anything like that back then. I first got involved in 2017 when Ethereum was kind of going crazy and the ICO craze and all of that. That was my first sort of cycle. I basically round-tripped it all. Fortunately, I kind of held a lot of my bags. So even though I left the space in 2018, 2019, 2020, when in 2021, things started picking up again, I had like a little bit of a bankroll to, like, I had like 10 ETH, you know, that was at one point worth, you know, $1,000. Now it was starting to be worth $5,000, $7,000. So I was like, all right, now I can do something with this. And the reason I sort of got hooked in 2021 is because all of a sudden you could do stuff with crypto. Like in 2017 and earlier, I understood it from the value prop for like money, store of value. Bitcoin made sense to me, sending money to people on the other side of the world. But like smart contracts were very abstract. I saw it and I was like, this seems cool. And like smart people really seem to like it, but I don't fully wrap my head around it.
Now we've come full circle all the way around to where we have smart contracts, but we're using ETHscriptions to just put things in the most basic way possible.
Yeah, and SolScriptions and AVAXscriptions, and it's gone a bit nutty.
When you left the space temporarily, did you go back to poker, or what were you doing in that short period?
I basically went back to poker. I went to law school. I was originally studying commerce law, and then in 20 2017, 2018, I can't really remember, went back to law school because I was like, I was kind of over poker by the end of it. I didn't really want to keep playing poker as my profession, but I didn't really have that many other prospects. And so I said, let me go back, study and see. But it wasn't for me. Like after a year, I dropped out again, year and a half, and then went back to poker again. And then crypto came along and I was like, yes, finally something I can sink my teeth into and jump in and sort of move on from poker.
Well, my co-host today, Prof, is a lawyer who loves poker and is super crypto-pilled. So I guess
it's
I couldn't
like
have chosen
really
a better
weird. Yeah, I'm listening to this going, wait, are you me? Am I you? What is happening? I've never played professionally, though. But it was
honestly,
really funny
better.
When you said you kind of left the space for a little bit. Right? When you said you left the space for a little bit, I did the exact same thing. So I came in with CryptoKitties in 2017 and then just kind of there was nothing else to do. Like that was interesting to me, but it wasn't enough. And then I kind of disappeared for a while and kind of started, you know, when the NFT thing started popping off again, I slid back in and that's what resonated with me. So it's really interesting to hear.
This is an interesting thing that people don't really talk about though, is oftentimes people are like, oh, well, I didn't get involved in 2013 or 2017. I missed those cycles, but they often don't think about the fact that like very few people were both involved then and also just, you know, stuck around and didn't leave.
Right.
It takes a lot of intestinal fortitude to have held anything through those three cycles. So, I mean, don't worry about when you join, just, you know.
Oh, I held. I still have my CryptoKitties. I just didn't get anything else. I didn't see CryptoPunks, unfortunately.
Didn't get those.
Well, that's so many people who were here from 2011, 2013, and they stuck around. They're active all the time, but they didn't make money because, or they didn't make that much money because, like you said, it's so difficult to buy the right thing and hold because people buy Bitcoin at 10 cents. It goes to $2 and they're like, oh my God, I just made 20X. I'm going to sell. And yeah, so it's really, really difficult. Even like everyone says, oh, I wish I was here then. The reality is even if you were here then, you probably wouldn't have made generational wealth that everyone always wishes. Yeah.
Yeah, we had Dan Romero on the show recently. We talked a little bit about that where, you know, he wasn't quite like a $12 Ethereum, but he was in pretty early. And he just said the same thing that you said. He's like, you know, you look at it and you're like, at like 100X and you're like, how can I not sell at least a good portion of this, right? So
yeah.
Anyway, easier to look back on in hindsight.
You're making me rethink my recent listings.
No, careful.
Maybe
we're just getting started. Just getting started. All right. You call yourself Zeneca. It's become quite a strong brand now in the space. Love to hear the backstory on how you came up with that name. I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours.
Yeah, I'd love to hear yours. So mine was in like March 2021, I realized, as you do when you're getting into the space pretty quickly, that you need to be on Twitter and you probably need to be in Discord as well to like have your ear to the ground and really navigate this space. And I had a Twitter account from my poker days, but I started using that for a bit, but you know, all my feed was full of poker players and I hadn't really used my Twitter account in 5 years. And it was just I was like, I need a fresh start and I need to follow crypto people. And so I just sat down, created a new account, asked for a username, and I just looked around my desk and I had a book from the Stoic philosopher Seneca. And I'm a big fan of Stoicism and believer in it. And so I just saw that. I was like, huh, maybe I can do something with that. I didn't want to just copy Seneca straight away. And I also like Buddhism and the Zen philosophy. And so I said, all right, let me just merge these two together. And that's where it came from.
Nice.
And it was just, yeah.
It reminds me of that Family Guy gag where they're like, what's your name? And he's like looking around. He's like, Peter Griffin.
I remember that. Yeah.
My story is not as good. One of the first NFT communities that I got involved with was Cryptodes. Well, I shouldn't say that. I was involved for most of 2021, but it was a lot of pump and dump garbage, as you know, and nothing really resonated. So Cryptodes was like the first project that really like grabbed me. And I was like, this is something really interesting. And Gremlin posted a thread at one point. And he was like, show me your toad and tell me its story. Like, give us some lore.
Mm.
And I had this toad. I still have this toad to this day. Held it all the way up to 20 ETH and back. That's how terrible of a trader I am. But anyway, I have this toad who has a little bit of a mohawk. And I was like, hey, you know, I think he rides a skateboard. And we'll call him Toady Hawk. And that just stuck as my name to this
day.
That's
great.
Now, did I ever think, though, for a minute that I would one day be interviewing Bob Burnquist and have to try to explain myself as to why I call myself Tony Hawk after his best friend?
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing.
because that happened. Amazing. Yeah, he was literally, he was in Miami having just skated with Tony the day before. And I was like, so this is a little awkward. Like, did you tell him you were going to be talking to some guy who's like riffing on his name? And he's like, Tony doesn't really get crypto. It's all good.
That's incredible. Anyway, I love that. Cool.
Yeah. One of the other interesting things about your pseudonym is that, of course, one of the founders of Nouns has a very similar pseudonym, Crypto Seneca. Have you guys ever met? We need to have you guys in the same room, the two Senecas.
Collide. Yeah, we haven't
met. Maybe they are the same really person.
Well, we've not been in the same place at the same time. We haven't really interacted that much.
That you know
actually. Yeah. So, no, we'd love to connect with them and I'm sure it will happen at some point. You know, this space is not that large and you spend enough time that you end up bumping into basically everyone at some point in time.
I bumped into everyone in Miami. They were all there.
Yeah. There you go.
Maybe Seneca
you guys. Because I wasn't feeling enough FOMO. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Prof. We appreciate it a lot.
Sorry.
early on, one of the ways that you made a name for yourself was with your spreadsheets. Can you talk a little bit about what possessed you to want to go through all the NFT numbers every single week and write up these spreadsheets and share them? And what was your thinking on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, poker player background is a lot about numbers, statistics, probabilities, and tracking data. And I've always just been that way inclined. And so in 2021, when I was doing a lot of trading myself, I had my own spreadsheet. Like I was like trying to track my own results and also the floor price of projects, because back then, you couldn't easily find the floor. Like it sounds so crazy to think about now. It's such a common metric, but OpenSea didn't list it anywhere, yeah. Let alone on the front page. There was no Blur. There was no floor app. There was no flips.expo. There was just nothing. The only way you could find the floor price of a project was clicking, like going into the project collection page, sorting from price low to high. I don't think it was default even sorted price low to high. And then seeing what the lowest listed, clicking buy now, and then seeing what the lowest listed price one was. And so I would just do that for like the four collections that I owned and then maybe like CryptoPunks and, you know, a couple others that I was tracking that I didn't own, but I, you know, were important to know in the space. And I was doing that for a few days. And then one day I have a friend in a group chat that said, I'd love, you know, it'd be cool to see the floor price of projects. And I was like, hey, take a look at this. And you know, group chat sort of liked it. And I said, huh, maybe I'll tweet it out and see if other people like it. And it just sort of immediately caught fire and people found it valuable. And then I was like, all right, let me do it the next day and the next day. And then basically kept that up for, I think I started in like May 21 and then basically ended at the end of the year because I mean, it started off with six projects. And then it was like two spreadsheets with 100 projects each by the end of the year. And it was like taking me 2 hours to update and keep accurate. But also by then a lot more apps and platforms were coming out where you could more easily track it. So I said, well, this is not as valuable as it used to be.
Well, no. And I mean, sometimes you just do something consistently for a season and sometimes it's okay to just want to move on yourself too. Right. I mean,
yeah,
it's great that you provided something that was needed at the time, but you also grew in your journey during that time, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I shifted onto wanting to do other things and, you know, I launched an academy and that was taking time and I wanted to, you know, write my newsletter and that was taking, it was a pretty natural ending and I'm happy that I did that and didn't continue to stick with it as much. Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons why I wanted to invite you on here is because we've had a lot of folks from the NFT space, but that have been on who are stewards of communities that are still around and they're obviously rare. You know, most communities that were bootstrapped in 2021, many of them, their Discords are either ghost towns or they're gone completely. So, you know, we've had Psyche on here from Dead Fellas. We've had Luca from Pudgy Penguins. So we've really touched base with a lot of these leaders who have run the gamut of the bear market and they're still here on the other side. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your story with Zen Academy and what it was like curating and continuing to build a community through the bear market over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a roller coaster, I think, to say the least. So I launched the Discord in, I think, June 2021, before we had any sort of token or membership or gating or anything like that. And I went back and forth on whether I did want to go down that path or not. Ultimately, I did. We launched an NFT that token gated the Discord in November. And I'm still not sure if that was the right decision. I think as royalties have disappeared and the model of sustaining the business has disappeared, it makes less and less sense. But anyway, putting that to the side, the community has like naturally grown and evolved over the last 2 years. Like in the early days, it was a lot about teaching people about NFTs and onboarding and like wallet security and a lot of like the quote unquote basics, as well as like finding opportunities and alpha and like just how to trade better and all that kind of stuff. And then as the bear market sort of settled in, and like there were just far fewer new people joining, so the onboarding stuff became less important and less relevant. Still important, but like us being the people to do that became less relevant. And the opportunities disappeared, so it became less about
you could almost have a one-on-one.
Yeah.
As time went on, you could almost have a one-on-one with the new people every week.
You really could. Yeah, it became – and we did that. Like we create a new thread for anyone that joins, like personally welcome them. And so like it shifted a lot more into like founders and people that were building. Like, you know, people always say bear markets are for builders. People that stuck around, I would say a large percentage of them had their own projects, were building, were content creators. And so for probably a year, you know, I would say mid-2022 to really up until a couple months ago, we were more of a founder community, and we helped the community talk about projects and founders and content and marketing and all that kind of stuff. And now we're sort of shifting back into trading and investing in alpha. And it's just been fun watching how it's sort of evolved over the last 2.5 years.
Yeah, for sure.
What were some lessons that you learned during this period of time? I think we've all learned so many lessons during this bear market, but what were some of the things that really stand out in your mind that you think you can take forward as we move into this next cycle?
There's a list this long. I mean, they say you learn from your mistakes, right? I mean, so many mistakes. Right. I mean, like there's obvious like trading mistakes in terms of like not taking enough profits and not all this kind of stuff. I think everyone round tripped. Infinite regret right there. I mean, I have a cryptoid as well, held to 20 ETH and back. And, you know, there's a million stories that we all have in that respect. But I think for like on the community side of things, there's been a lot. I think one of the biggest mistakes I would say is shiny ball syndrome, where you see another community do something great and you're like, oh, let's do that. That seems great. And then you try and do it. And then, oh, this other, let's do that. And you try and do that. And then you end up like, we were very much spread too thin and chasing too many different directions, and we like lost clarity and vision and all that kind of stuff. And so I think just like doing one or two things really well instead of trying to do 50 things or even 10 things mediocrely is probably a big one.
That resonates so much. That resonates so much with me. You know, so one of my friends was saying to me recently, who's sort of interested in crypto a little bit, but he's like, so what's happening with the Solana ecosystem and this and that? And I said, you know what? Lots is happening there. I can tell. But you know, I cannot keep up with everything that's happening in Nouns, in Ethereum, and in L2s, in Optimism, and I'm doing so much in this space. I just know if I like try to go and figure out what's happening in Solana, you know, it's just going to bifurcate too much of my attention. You have to just concentrate on what you know, and like obviously you try not to miss anything crazy, but. You know, you can't do everything. You can't be everything to everyone, right? So
100%.
That's good advice.
I think, you know, your piece, I mentioned Infinite Regret before, but that piece to me was super important in my personal crypto journey. So I wanted to share that with you because it gave me a name for this thing that I constantly was experiencing but didn't fully get it. Like it just like, oh yes, that's what it is. And it's funny because it made so much sense coming from a poker player, because the only two times that I've felt those things is poker and crypto, like, because you know, I can remember the, you know, the full houses I folded and the, you know, like forever, you know, you can remember these things stick with you. It's really weird, but I feel like it helped me also move past it. To where, just like you said, Toadie, it's like you finally go, you know what? I don't need to chase that thing. Now, I used to. I used to feel like I had to chase all the things and be all the places. And it's like I'm starting to figure out, even, you know, going to conferences, it's like, you know what? I don't need to have FOMO over everything. I don't need to be all the places at all the times. I need to pick and choose and be a little more intentional, and also not feel like that regret of every single decision. Like I just, you know, let it go and move on to the next thing and realize that, you know, the bigger scheme, we're still early in the bigger scheme of things. So
one time I folded pocket deuces and it would have been the bad beat at the casino I was playing. Like I folded on the flop, but it ended up running out and it would have been the bad beat. That sucked. That's infinite regret right there. I didn't remember it until just now. So thanks, Prof, for that.
Sorry. Sorry about that. Yep. Yeah. I mean, that happens all, you think back, you can, those things stick with you. The hands stick with you, the good and bad. And then and the same thing when you're doing trades and NFTs or the project.
Right. You don't want to look at your hidden folder.
I saw that. I was right there. I saw that thing. Why didn't I, this, we could go on and on because Toady is an O'Pepin like whale. And I was just like, I don't know.
I'm not a whale, but I love O'Pepin. Yeah. I love
I don't
Jack's
know why
doing.
It didn't click. Yeah, it just didn't. I was like, oh, yeah, I see you doing all that. But I was like, and then it's like, what was I thinking? So that's like there are certain ones that do just stick because there wasn't a good reason that you turned away. So it's really funny.
We've talked kind of all the way around it now, but I'm just curious. Some people who might be listening to this later, maybe they've never read that piece about Infinite Regret. Yeah. Can you give us sort of the TLDR of what this piece was about?
Yeah, I mean, basically the idea is that no matter what you do, you're going to feel some sort of regret inherently because you can't time the top, you can't time the bottom. It's just almost impossible. And there's so many opportunities that come around all the time in this space that there's this feeling of just like infinite regret. It feels like, oh, I just missed that. Oh, I was here when O'Pepins were, minting all very, very cheap. Why didn't I get in on them? I was here when Goblin Town was a free mint and then it went to 10 ETH. I was here when yada, 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 yada. I was here when Bonk was, and I saw Bonk at under, 50 million market cap. And now it's like, we all go through it. I go through it all the time myself. And it's the sort of the mindset shift of trying to think of it.
I sold my Pudgy Penguin at 2 ETH.
I sold 18 Pudgy Eggs at
0.01. When did you sell it?
Oh.
Like, let's don't even talk about the penguins. Like, what did you do?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a dream about penguins last night. Actually, I sold my 8 and bought, I think, 30 little pudgies at 1 ETH, and then they went to 2 ETH and then 3 ETH, and I felt like a genius. And then I woke up and I did not have that. I hadn't done that, but I was like, should I be buying more pudgies? And I don't know. Maybe the answer is yes.
Now, speaking of whales, Prof is a little pudgy whale.
No, I'm not.
Oh yeah.
Well, I only have 9, and I'm actually one of the things I was like, I should probably sell a couple, and take some profit. So I did let Luca know ahead of time that I might do that. So I was like, don't take it personally. You'll still get royalties.
That's when you know that you're too involved in the crypto space is when you have to actually formally apologize to the project leaders when you need to take profits.
To the CEO.
You've met too many people.
Well, in person after you just took a selfie.
Actually, I'm joking, but that actually is a real problem for people like you, Zeneca, that, have so many people following your wallets. Like, what is it like sometimes to know that you've got that stress of people are tracking your wallets, and if you do this or do that, they're going to impute certain, intentions into what you're doing?
Yeah, I think that was, probably one of the bigger mistakes I made last cycle was caring far too much about that. Like, I would just hold everything because I didn't want, people to think I didn't believe in the project, B, the teams to think I didn't believe in them, or C, for like if I had spoken publicly about a project and be like, hey, I like this project, I just felt like I couldn't sell it for X amount of time, and that just dragged on and on and on. And so I just bag-held and round-tripped almost everything. And nowadays, I just care a lot less, and I think people care a lot less. And the sell-shaming thing, it was a big thing back last cycle. Now I think, thankfully, most people don't really care as much about it now.
Don't worry, it'll come back.
Oh yeah, it definitely still does a little bit. But like a month ago I decided I wanted to sell a bunch of NFTs, and so I just wrote a Twitter thread telling everyone, hey, I'm selling a bunch of NFTs. This is why. If don't take offense if you're the team, if you're a holder, it doesn't mean I don't believe in the project. I just have too many different collections and I want to consolidate and streamline. And that post was well received, and I've sold a lot of NFTs in the last couple of months, and it's just like, but that's a very real thing of like, once you meet the team and you know the founders and you know the community, it's like, it's difficult to separate the emotions from what you know to be a good financial decision, where it's like, well, I need to take profits, or, I can't have 20% of my bankroll in this one project, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
I think the other issue for me is that, sometimes they're just really cute, or I really like the art and I can't part with it. Like, that was my biggest problem. Yep. It's like, which ones do I sell? I love them all. It's really hard.
That's my problem.
I'm very
with
attached to my digital.
Every time I buy cryptos, I just look at them like, I can't sell this thing. It's too beautiful.
Yeah.
So speaking of NFT collections, pretty recently, a few months back now, you released something that we've been looking forward to for a while, and that was the Denizens collection. I'd love to hear what it was like, the whole process of creating that collection. Because so Prof Werder often talks, she's involved with BuilderDAO, which I'm not sure if you're familiar, but that is a DAO that was funded by Nouns to build a tool that makes it very easy to spin up a DAO, essentially, in a Nounish fashion. And one thing she often says is that you need to have like proof of community before you think of, you know, doing anything else, whether it's making a DAO or making a PFP and what have you. And I think that's one thing that you've done really well. Obviously, you created this community, and you could have spun up a PFP anytime during the 2021, you know, froth, but you concentrated on building your community first, and you made this special. So can you talk a little bit about the journey of, you know, going from the original Zen Academy and the 333 Club all the way through to the Denizens collection?
So when we launched in 2021, I was like I very intentionally did not launch a PFP because I said, well, there's a million PFP projects out there. The last thing the space needs is one more PFP project. And it would have been, you know, a lot more work and time and energy and effort into actually creating that. And so I said, let me just, you know, create a membership, ERC-1155, basic token, and we'll just see where the road takes us. No roadmap.
It was a letter from you.
It was a letter. Yeah, I created it in Canva. I created it in Canva. I saved the JPEG or PNG file, and then, you know, I was fortunate to be friends with some devs from the Haymint team, and they sort of wrote the smart contracts and created the website, and so very, very budget, a low budget production, and then so like I didn't really, there were no plans to create a PFP, but like a year into running the community, it sort of like started popping up. A few people asked, are we going to do a PFP? I started thinking about it more, and you know, I'm a big believer in PFPs. I think they're a fantastic way for communities to bond and grow, and it's marketing on social media, and it's great art, and it's all sorts of positive community strengthening things. And since we already had a community, it was like, all right, now it kind of makes sense. So let's do it. Let's think about it. Let's do it. And it was kind of like from when we had the idea to when we actually released them, it was like a year. It took way longer than I thought it was going to take from the outset. Like I'd advise projects, and I had friends who launched them, but I'd never been like intimately involved in the day-to-day running of creating a PFP, especially when you want to make the art really great and the experience really great. And yeah, it was a long, drawn out, expensive process over many, many months, many, many people working on it. And at some point we made the decision that we weren't going to charge for it. It was going to be a free PFP for our community. Partially because of market conditions, but also partially because we didn't want to, you know, every project, a lot of projects, they launch something and then they sell something to the community and then another NFT. And we wanted to make it less of, we didn't want to turn our community members into customers, basically. And it ended up with us sort of basically running out of money to support the business and the team and everything like that. But now I look at it as like a blessing in disguise, because we've sort of got this new version now where it's a much more skeleton crew, bare bones team. And the focus really is on the community, and we don't need a large team to keep our community as strong as it has ever been. So, yeah, it was a journey to say the least, but, I don't regret it. Honestly, I'm very happy with how they turned out, and the team that, you know, everyone that worked on it was incredible. So very happy with it.
Touched on something by, you know, mentioning that the change that you're making to your approach and focus on community. Have you thought about turning that into a DAO? Of course I had to ask this question. Sorry. has there been any consideration about around that and thinking maybe we take that approach?
Yes. I've been thinking about DAOs since the very early days. Because I love the concept of a DAO. I've been part of many DAOs, and I know that in reality, almost all of them suffer from disinterest or fatigue or attrition, or it's just very difficult to sustain an active DAO. So I'm not ruling it out. I think the natural end of Zen Academy is for it to become a DAO. I don't mean end, but like end state, where it is then in the hands of, you know, I will still be an active member, but then there'll be other community members that are also active, and we're all sort of building it together. And I think we're sort of inching towards that direction. Yeah. I think I just want, like, you can't it's very difficult to uncreate a DAO. Once it's very difficult to unlaunch an ERC-20 token. It's like something you can't really take back easily. So I'd rather wait until, I mean, there's no rush is what I'm thinking. However, I will say that like with the 333 Club, which is like a much smaller sub community within Zen Academy, we are sort of actively exploring creating a DAO structure to basically allow to create it into like an investment club, investment group, because, you know, a bunch of other communities have done it, NeoTokyo, Gojira, where there's so many opportunities in this space to invest, you know, in early stage projects, token launches, things like that. And I get a lot of deal flow. I would love to share that with the community as well. And so that we're figuring out how to do that. And like a DAO structure is sort of a requirement to make that work and reduce liability and all that kind of stuff. So we are exploring a DAO, but probably not a whole Zen Academy DAO anytime soon.
If you ever go down that road and want it to be an NFT DAO, definitely take a peek at Nouns Builder, but also we're launching something called Collections Plus pretty soon, where you can take your existing collection and turn that into a DAO. So you could use the Denizens.
That's very exciting. Yeah.
Already, we'll definitely, which would be really cool. So just something to keep in mind. Had to shill. Sorry. Continue, Cody.
No, I think those are big unlocks, especially now that we're firmly into L2 season and you can actually create a DAO and function as a DAO and settle your auctions, you know, for pennies instead of dollars. It's going to make a huge difference. So I'm kind of excited to see the wave of DAOs that we see in this next bull run. I think it's probably going to be more than we maybe even anticipate. You talked a little bit about, I guess, the maybe an existential problem with NFT projects, which is like, how do you grow without making your community your customer? And I think that's a really interesting problem. I think it's something that Deadfellas has done a really good job navigating. And there's maybe a couple other projects that have done a really great job. Probably Pudgy would fall in that category too. But for the most part, you know, the streets are littered with these, with projects that just tried to extract one too many times, you know, from their communities, and eventually their communities were like, nah, I'm out. What advice would you give to the next cohort, I guess, of communities that will be built in this space? How can they conquer that issue?
The crux of it is the difference between a community and a business, a community and a company. And I think that trying to build both at the same time is incredibly difficult. And I don't think you necessarily need to do both at the same time. You can build a community without trying to build a profitable business. And that's kind of what we're trying to do now. Examples of that are punks, toads, cryptodes, you know, a great community. There's no business. They're not trying to create revenue. It's just vibes, !! Right? That's a great community. And I think that too many people, myself included, for most of the last 2 years said, all right, we've sold some NFTs, we've released NFTs, we've got a bunch of people. Now what? Let's build something. Let's create something. And then it was trying to figure out what that was. And that ended up, you know, shiny ball syndrome in too many directions. And realizing at the end of the day that I really just want to focus on the community, and we don't need a big profitable business flywheel machine, because if you have the right community, if you're doing it right, the community members will be active. They'll want to help each other out. They'll show up every day, and everyone then is like helping each other. And that's, to me, the ultimate type of community. On the flip side, if you're trying to build a company, you probably don't need NFTs. Like, I think that the reality is that most people launch without really thinking it through, especially in this age of royalties being extremely difficult to enforce and all that kind of stuff. So I think people should think long and hard about whether they want to like build a company. You can always add the NFT part later or the token part later. And then there's the very, 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 like a very small percentage of projects that do manage to do both. Pudgy Penguins is probably the best shiny example of that, I think, where they've got NFTs, they've got the IP, they've got a community, and they've built a sustainable business out of it because the IP is so cute, and they're just gold standard. But it's the vast minority. So I think that it really is the exception rather than the rule to be able to build a community and a company at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely one of the questions I wanted to ask you about today. It's what actually prompted me to reach out and invite you to come on today. Is you did make a post recently, last week, I think it was, about some soul searching that you had been doing. And you just touched on it a little bit, but maybe if you could expound on that a little bit about that thread and you know, what sort of caused you to write it, and also what the reception's been like from the community so far.
Yeah, I mean, basically, for a few months now, I've been thinking about... I haven't been happy myself. I haven't been sort of content with how I was spending my time and what I was doing, both from the perspective of enjoying it, but also feeling like I was being my most productive self and contributing the most that I could be to the community, to the space, to the world, to myself, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of it was because we were trying to create revenue, generate profit, be a business, because we needed to, because we had a team that I needed to pay and figure out how to pay them. And like that runway was sort of running out. And I was like, all right, we need money to pay for the team. And then I was like, well, I don't love this. And I think it's sort of, it's so difficult and it's sort of hurting the community in the process as well. And so I said, well, you know, we already had to go through a couple of rounds of layoffs throughout the year because of the bear market and finances and things. And we got to the point where there were already very few people left on the team. And I said, maybe we just shift entirely and stop trying to be a company and just try and be a community. And yes, that might mean we drop some of the initiatives we were working on, but I honestly don't think they were going to succeed or significantly move the needle anyway. And I get to go back to doing what I want to do and what I enjoy doing, what I think provides value. And that's like creating content and being a community member and being active in that respect. And the community gets to like understand where the focus is and really it is on the community. And without a team, I mean, we have a bare bones team basically now, one Discord moderator and one person helping with collabs and giveaways. But without sort of a massive team, I no longer need to think about making money and generating profit. And it's like, I'm now in a position where I say, I don't need Zen Academy to make money at all. Like I can sustain this. It's totally fine. It's great. Community is great. And we can just create value for one another now. And it's like a massive weight lifted off my shoulders. I mean, the team was absolutely amazing. Like some of the best and brightest people I've ever known have been part of the Zen Academy team, but it's sort of, I guess, reached its natural end and it's sort of like a happy, sad, bittersweet moment, but certainly a big weight lifted off my shoulders. And the community reception has been overwhelmingly positive and heartwarming, I think. Basically, no negativity from anyone within the community. A couple of people outside the community had some negative things to say, but like you can't please everyone in this space. So I'm pretty happy with how it went.
So you've talked pretty openly about some burnout that you were feeling, some you know, stress and what you've been going through the past couple of months. Can you talk a little bit about what made you be so open about that and anything you want to share in terms of maybe advice to founders that, you know, learning that you got from these past few months from this experience?
Yeah, there's going to be a whole new cohort, I'm sure, of founders.
Yeah,
I mean, find himself in the same place. Yeah,
it's brutal. I mean, the space is brutal. Being a founder of any company, Web2, Web3 is brutal. Combine them, it's really tough. And so burnout is something I've faced for a very, very long time. Back in my poker days, I would go through burnout. I would play lots and lots and lots for like, you know, 4 months, and then I'd just be so burned out I couldn't play for 6 weeks. And so I'm very familiar with burnout. And it's one of those things that even though you're familiar with it and you know what you should do to prevent it from happening, it's still going to happen because it's just one of those things that you can't always prevent. Sometimes you just life happens and you find yourself burned out. And it's basically what happened to me. It's happened a couple of times over the last couple of years, but probably the most significant was 2-3 months ago, I think. It was just sort of overwhelming burnout. And I was like, I just can't function as a human, and was spending most of my days like in bed or just watching TV or scrolling Instagram or YouTube shorts or whatever and playing video games and just like eating crap and just like, you know, depressed and burned out and just like I felt very bad. And I mean, that's something that I think most people will go through at some point in their lives, especially in this day and age. And I haven't always been open, but at a certain point in my life, I decided to just share what I was going through more publicly and with others. And I think it's been a massive help and unlock to me. When you talk about things, it sort of helps you process them, get them out there. And for me, it's helpful to me. And it also, I think, it shares what I'm going through with the community so people understand why I might not be. It takes some pressure off because people are generally pretty accepting of it. And they're like, all right, he hasn't replied to an email or a DM or he's not as active in Discord. I know why. And so like, it helps alleviate that pressure. And then also I think it helps people that are going through something similar, not feel so alone. And like every time I make a post about depression or burnout or mental health or anything, like my recent post about the new direction of Zen Academy, I get like 50 people reach out and be like, I feel exactly the same. And thank you for writing that. And so that's like motivation to keep sharing what I'm sharing. Occasionally I feel like very hesitant, like I don't want to do it, but I never have regretted doing it.
You know, and you mentioned your writing. I really enjoy your writing. I've enjoyed, you know, I mentioned the Infinite Regret piece, but you've done quite a few long form pieces, both as threads and as, you know, sort of blog posts. And I don't even know if I'd call it a blog post. Essays is probably a better word. Can you talk a little bit about that and what sort of drove that? Is this something you were doing? Were you a writer before this? Did it come out through this space? And is this like a new talent that you kind of got honed as part of what you were doing?
It's definitely gotten honed a lot in this space, but I've always liked writing. I've always liked reading and writing and the English language and words, I would say. Before this, I mean, for most of my life, I didn't write actively, but I did have a poker blog for a couple of years and I would write then, and that felt good. And back in high school, my favorite language, my favorite class was English and writing, and like law is like a lot of reading and writing and understanding the definition of words. Mm-hmm. And as I'm sure you know, and so like, there's always been this common thread of liking writing, but I never like really practiced it a lot or wrote a lot until getting into this space. And the reason I started like writing my newsletter was because A, I like writing, but also I learn best if I have to like, if I have to talk about, for instance, I'm planning on writing a newsletter about Solana, I need to research and really properly understand what's going on in that ecosystem. So I'm going to learn, or I did the same with Ordinals a few months back. And so that's where it started from. Mm-hmm. That's still what keeps me going. And it's just, it's like any skill or thing that you do. Like I go back and look at my early newsletters or my early Twitter threads and they were like, a cringe because like I don't think they were good writing, but it's like, you know, you start off you start off putting something out there and then you learn and you improve and you find your own tone of voice and you get comfortable, and now it's like I feel confident to write a piece and feel good about putting it out there, and really I enjoy the process. And so it's been like this lifelong, I think, evolving journey, and now I really do think of myself, I guess, as a writer, whereas 5 years ago or even 3 years ago I never would have mm-hmm. Thought of myself like that.
Do you ever feel overwhelmed when you need to learn like an entire new ecosystem and parse it for people? And like, it's just so much information, you know, to try to curate. How do you deal with that?
By the way, that's what I do. That's what I do for a living.
That's
when
fair.
When you're teaching a class on blockchain and it's like, true. I have to teach you about Bitcoin, Ethereum, all the other things, you know, it's like, it's crazy. And it changes all the time. So I'm constantly relearning. But to your point, when you're teaching somebody else, that's how you really learn it. But back to Tony's question about being overwhelmed.
No, I mean, you make a really good point. It's always changing, which is part of the difficulty. I would say I'm fortunate that I don't really feel overwhelmed with that side of things. I think like, if I had to say like what, if I had a superpower, it is taking lots of information, processing it quickly and explaining it in easy to understand language. Like that's the one thing that I'm confident saying that I can do well. And I think of it in like different layers. Like there's the people who have very little to no understanding of a topic. And then there's the people one layer up, which I probably include myself in, where I have like a basic understanding. I'm not technical. I'm not sophisticated. I won't know everything correct, but I have a good enough understanding to explain it to the people on the level below. And then there's the people above me that are like, you know, they understand how the tech works and they're very much more sophisticated, but they might not be able to explain it to the people two steps below. And so I'm sort of like in that place where I can take this complex information, kind of wrap my head around it in like a basic way. Like, I don't know really how it works, but this seems like it's important and this sounds good, and then explain it. And so like, that's the one thing that I can do well, I think. And so I feel good about that. I think the difficulty is if I ever feel forced to write about something that I don't want to write about or that I'm not interested in. And if I have to like, that I struggle with a lot, and to try and research something that I'm not passionate about, it's very, very difficult for me.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's true. I think you are really good at that. And I think it's an important sort of skill set that we need to have in this ecosystem. And sometimes people who are more technical, you know, they forget that they are kind of two sides of the same coin. Like, you know, people aren't just going to drop into Web3 and know what ZK snarks are. That's not the way the world works. You know, someone needs to take them along the garden path and tell them why they should even care about any of this first and foremost. And then eventually you get to maybe a ZK snark down the line.
I mean, to be fair, I don't even know what a ZK is. I've seen the word and term around. I know what zero knowledge proofs are and ZKs are, but I don't know what a ZK snark is. Like, I probably knew at one point, but it's gone out of my head. Know. So there you go.
I mean, I think I probably picked a good example. I think none of the three of us could probably give a good definition of.
I can't give a good definition.
It has something to do with zero knowledge proofs, but you're right. I don't really know.
Yeah.
We talked earlier about the previous cycle and what you learned during the bear market. I'd love to know if you've been thinking at all about, as things are shifting a little bit and it looks like we might be getting, I don't want to jinx it, but getting closer to getting out of this bear market and into some bullish vibes. what are you most looking forward to in this next cycle?
Um, There's a lot, actually. Like, this is a lot of people say this is the last cycle, like the last big crazy crypto cycle we're going to have. And I kind of believe in that as well. I think this is the cycle that we go mainstream. This is the cycle that markets get a lot more efficient. AI is going to be everywhere. It's going to be much more difficult to have these crazy opportunities. And it's not going to feel like a, I think, like it's already, I'm sure for the people that were here early, it doesn't feel like a small, close, tight-knit community, but it still is. Like in the grand scheme of things, there aren't that many of us. I think in 3 years' time, it's going to be relatively mainstream and it's not going to be as tight, anywhere near as tight-knit as it is. And so I'm, that's a double-edged sword, right? It's great to have a lot more mass adoption, but it's also, it's like you miss that closeness of a smaller community. But I'm just excited for seeing some real global mainstream actual use cases of this technology and onboarding like literally millions and millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people to using crypto in a way that's seamless, makes their lives better, helps them. And it's like this wonderful win-win-win situation, whether it's like from gaming to payment processing and sending money to a friend on the other side of the world without fees and things like that, to be able to use DeFi and get a better return on their money without having to give banks such a big cut. And just there's so many positive use cases of crypto. And I think that with like layer twos and Solana and with smart wallets and account abstraction and like all these things that really just make the onboarding process easier and cheaper, it's going to unlock all this stuff. So I'm excited for that. And also I think like most people excited for the potential profit that you can make in a bull market if you play things right and you can really make some good money in this market. And so trying to learn from the last market and do better this time around and hopefully, you know, yeah, maybe we're in the bull market, maybe we're not. I was actually listening to Bankless yesterday and they officially called the start of the bull. Take that for what it's worth.
I heard that. I was listening to that today, actually, yeah.
I heard that too. I was listening to it on my way back from Miami and I'm like, oh, did they just jinx us?
We'll feels good, but it's also like,
feels good.
If I had, gun to my head, I do think this is the start of the bull market. I think we've begun and we could go sideways, we could go down a bit more, but it's like, I think there's too much momentum, too much stuff happening. And I think that we're getting shorter cycles. And so anyway, it's time to this is the time to really pay attention. You know, if there's ever a point in your life, I think that you want to overwork and put in a lot of time into one thing and potentially have a payoff for the rest of your life, I think the next 18 months is that time. So I'm treating it like that. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna work my ass off for 12 to 18 months and then hopefully that's gonna set things up for the future in a nice way.
Hopefully you're manifesting that for all of us.
Yeah, please.
For everyone.
Please do. I think we're all thinking that, right? Yeah, we're all hoping. Yeah. WAGMI. Yeah. Let's hope we bring back the WAGMI vibes.
Honestly, yeah, that is the feeling. But we need a new term for this cycle, I think.
And then we'll all be building too. Are we going back? Is that one still the thing? Are we bringing that back? No.
That was bear market things. I think we're past that now. Funny. It's like we're WAGMI vibes again. And then the next bear market will be back to building.
All right.
That's funny.
All right.
So we want, this is Zero Rights Reserve, so it's a Nounish pod. So we want to ask you about Nouns and your experience with Nouns. I mean, you've been on a couple different Nounish shows, and what I really want to ask about though is obviously you have some affinity for the Noggles. Because they're included in your PFP collection. So how did that decision come about? And what's been your, what's your affinity for the glasses? We want to know.
I love them. We were talking before we started recording that I actually have a pair that you're both wearing, but I think they're on my desk back in Dubai. I'm in Australia at the moment. I actually have two pairs. I have a blue pair that are like the Budweiser ones, I think, and then the ones that you're wearing. And I've loved Nouns since day one, there you go. Except mine are ones that you can't actually wear. They're like, I don't know if you've seen the ones that you can't like contract the
Budweiser ones. Yeah.
Yeah. They just sit there. But yeah,
they're a beer company, not a glasses maker. So give them some leeway.
Give them some slack. Yeah. But ever since I first heard about the idea of Nouns and then saw the, auctions start off and I was like, this is a novel concept. It's interesting. It's new. Nouns are CC0, which I was a fan of then because of Blitmaps and just seeing other projects in that sphere. I love the concept of a DAO. I still do. And it's like, it just had all the right ingredients. And so I've been fascinated by it since the early days. And the Noggles, I mean, they're so iconic now. And they're like, to me, one of the most epitomized versions of what CC Zero can do. And that's, I'm a big fan of it. And when we were launching our Denizens collection, I really wanted to make the collection CC Zero as a personal thing. And like, that's like my philosophy and I like that. And we went back and forth, but like we spoke with the community, put a poll out. We really went through a lot of avenues and realized that it's not the right decision for our community because people feel more emotionally connected to their NFTs if they have IP rights ownership. Even if, you know, there may be some misconceptions out there and there may be some things that they can do, even if it was CC0 and all sorts of stuff. I think it's just like that perception issue. And like, yeah, we could educate and try and do that, but it wasn't right to make our collection CC0 ultimately. But the beauty of CC0, we can take traits from other collections and incorporate them. And that's, you know, I think from the very early days, I was like, we have to have a Noggles trait. And actually the very first idea for our PFPs, they were going to be pixel, because I love pixel art as well. And ultimately we didn't go down that route and I'm thankful we didn't because our illustrator Pondering is absolutely amazing, but we still had to have the Noggles in there. Beautiful. So,
yeah.
You've written quite a bit about CC0 and I think it's your thoughts are really interesting on it. And I know you've written about how it's not right for every project, but what do you think are the strengths of CC0? What attracted you to sort of that type of, it's actually not licensing, that type of dedication, yeah. Non-licensing.
Lack of licensing. I mean, there's the legal simplicity of it. Generally speaking, you don't have to get terms and conditions written up. You don't have to worry about, are people using our IP? Do we have to go after them? Do we have to protect it? All that kind of stuff. It's generally cheaper, I think. It's more, I think, an embodiment of the crypto ethos, which is open source, decentralized, can use what you want. What's the other word? Interoperability, where, you know, projects work together and take pieces from here and there, and composability and build on top of it. All of that. Composability. It just makes so much sense to me. And I love it from that perspective. But it is a new thing. Like, I mean, obviously we've had things in the public domain and people will occasionally release things that are open source and CC0, but in the IP world, and when it comes to, you know, art or artistic expression, or storytelling and things like that, it's, as far as I'm aware, and maybe I'm missing things, but like there haven't been any, if many, instances of people creating IP and then immediately releasing it into the public domain. And I think, and seeing what happens. And so it's a big experiment, and I love experiments as well. So I think there's a lot of reasons to be inclined towards CC0 and just like seeing how it plays out. But I think we need the non CC0 versions as well. We need to see what happens when NFTs are released with IP. And holders get ownership, and there's like all sorts of different models, and we'll see in 20 years what happens and where things are. It's like, it's far too soon to tell.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned that we haven't seen people just, you know, give up the rights. We haven't seen enough history, let's say, of people who've just given up the rights to their IP. But what we have seen is we've seen lots of the other side of the coin. We've seen, you know, Disney become one of the most successful entertainment companies in the world, using the content from people who made it and made it public domain, either on purpose or just by the passage of time. And so, you know, like, would we even know? Would we, the three of us, having grown up in the West, know who the Brothers Grimm were without Disney? Maybe, probably not. Mm-hmm. So we've seen sort of some of the knock-on effects of CC0, and that's part of what actually I loved about Cryptodes the most when I first found it. I was like, wow, this is so simple. The pixel art, the fact that it's, you know, you can use it however you want. I can make it my PFP. I can be this thing. So yeah, there's a lot of really interesting things about CC0 that kind of draw you in, I think.
Yeah. It's,
we'll see if it has staying power.
Yeah, I think we're getting to see a really interesting experiment play out in comparison with Pudgy Penguins and the way they're approaching IP, but also proliferation. They're approaching proliferation in a way that is similar to what Nouns is doing, but centralized versus decentralized, and being able to see, you know, if you own your IP for the Pudgies, the company is going to license it, do what they're going to do, and you're going to get royalties back to it. So there's this really interesting experiment there. But they're also doing this proliferation. They're allowing their holders to do their own thing. And Luca mentioned the other day that, you know, he has holders who are competing with him in the plushie space, and he's happy about it. You know, it's great because it's that same thinking of like, that still raises the profile regardless. So it's similar to what we think about with Nouns with CC0, is that everyone being able to use it continuously raises the profile of the whole project.
Or yeah, it reminds me of
hopefully
a thread
the theory.
Yeah. It reminds me of a thread that DC Investor posted sometime last year, or maybe it was even the year before. It's all a blur. But he talked about how he made his punk CC0, if I'm not mistaken. And he just said, you know, you can take my punk and you can try to do what I do, but are you going to, you know, and are people going to listen to you and confuse you with me? Probably not. Like, the strength is in the brand. The strength is in the execution. And actually, CryptoPunk Noah has done a similar thing. He's also made his punk CC0 and kind of made a similar argument. It's, you know, it's your reputation lies in what you do and who you are and you know, who your community is. And so in a way, like, making something CC0 is almost like a huge bet on yourself. It's like, yeah, go ahead, copy me, you know, be my guest.
Yeah. It'll only help me in the process because it increases the profile. And it's fascinating to see all the different approaches that different people and companies and projects are taking, because there's many roads to success. And I think that there's no one right answer. And again, we'll see how things play out in the next, you know, several years. Hopefully multiple paths do win. Yeah,
for sure. So we did ask some of our community for questions that they might want to ask you. We asked on Twitter and Farcaster and Discord. One of the questions that came up is maybe a can of worms that I shouldn't be opening on like the last 5 minutes of a podcast, but we did get a question about your thoughts on royalties. And I know you've spoken about it quite a bit. You've written about it quite a bit. It's not something that can be easily parsed, but can you give any sort of general thoughts on what you think the future of the royalty conversation will be? Because basically where we stand right now, there was a race to the bottom, and you know, now it's very difficult to enforce any kind of royalties. Where do you think this goes in the future?
Yeah, it is difficult to, in a few minutes, really share my thoughts. I think that royalties are simultaneously an important part of the crypto and especially NFT movement, but also in certain respects, antithetical to the crypto movement as well. Like, I think that in a way that like CC0 is very crypto native, I think zero royalties is very crypto native. But then you also have on the flip side, IP. It's very, actually the analogies are quite similar. And the solution is quite similar as well, where I think we're going to have both scenarios where some projects have no royalties and have no royalties enforced and probably shouldn't, either by design or by the market designing it that way. Other projects will, either by people choosing to pay royalties, like people do with certain art, and Artblocks has one of the higher percentage of royalty payments of any project, or by project enforcing it by centralization methods. You can only trade on certain marketplaces and restrictions and things like that, which they're not fully decentralized, you know, custodied bearer assets and NFTs in that way because they're restricted, but maybe that's good enough and you still get some of the elements of interoperability or composability or whatever that NFTs can afford. And so I think the future is, again, we'll have certain projects that have royalties enforced and people buying them will know that they're enforced and they'll be enforced forever, hopefully with some sort of solution. And then there'll be other ones that don't have them and they're fully free and open and people will have the choice of which do I want and why do I want them? Like, I mean, as a creator, as someone that launched a project in 2021, royalties were a huge part of why I did NFTs. I said, well, all right, we can bring in sustainable revenue through the royalties. So let's hire people, let's build a team and let's work that out. And then all of a sudden we got to the point where that was, the writing was on the wall, that was disappearing, and then started looking for other revenue streams and all that. But perhaps we didn't need to think about that in the first place. And if there were no royalties, there'd be no team and we'd have a community focus from day one. And yeah, big can of worms, but I think that we're gonna end up with closed gardens and fully open solutions as well.
I think that's a big part of the problem is that there was kind of a, I don't think it was on purpose, but there was like almost like an industry-wide bait and switch where all of these artists were promised, hey, you know, come to Web3, you'll actually be able to make, you know, earnings in perpetuity on your art, not like this physical art where you sell it once and you'll never know where it ends up. You know, here's the dream of NFTs. And then they got here and then the Code is Law cohort were like, well, actually, You know, you can't enforce that at the contract level. And then it just took, you know, Blur in this case to sort of force the issue. And they were right. They went basically to zero. And so I think that's the problem. It's like, how now do you go back to these artists and say, well, this is what we promised, but actually it wasn't deliverable. How do we make it so that there are ways for you to continue to be rewarded for your, you know, for your amazing art, right? This leads into another question that I wanted to ask about that is, have you seen what Zora is doing with their creator rewards? And do you have any thoughts on that?
I have not seen. I'm generally a big fan of everything Zora does. So I'd love to know, what are they doing?
So creator rewards, the way they've done it now is they basically, what used to be a free mint, which, you know, if you free mint on Zora or free mint on Manifold or any of these platforms, you were always paying an admin fee. It was like maybe $1 or $2 depending on the mint. So what they did is they basically made that fee shareable. And so now every free mint that's on Zora for the past 8 months now, people do pay the admin fee, but Zora gives a percentage of that back to the creators. So it's almost like a secondary royalty. So instead of it being a primary royalty, it's a way that people can mint things, artists can mint things and earn in perpetuity so long as people mint them, so long as it's an open mint. So it kind of like turns everything that's on its great. Head. Instead of it being all about scarce mints and royalties that are high, now it's like mint everything forever. And you'll always get a percentage of the secondary. So I'm pretty bullish on that. And I'm curious to know what you
I think
that'll be
Creative solutions. Creative solutions is what we need, and that's a really great one.
Amazing.
Yeah, totally agree.
Prof, did you have any other questions on your list that we didn't get to?
I have one really funny, interesting question. Sure. So you've been a professional poker player for quite a while. There are quite a few professional poker players in our space. Have you ever played with them?
I played with quite a lot of them.
How about Keyboard Monkey?
No, I don't think Keyboard Monkey and I crossed paths in the poker place.
He played against me in the Zen Academy tournament. Does that count?
Did he really? I didn't know that.
they run how tournaments. How did you do, Tony? Yeah. I've won that tournament a couple times. Actually,
I know.
So
yeah.
Actually, talk about that. How did that come about? And how? Tell me about the poker tournaments with Zen Academy.
Yeah, we're definitely going to continue them. So like, they started out because it was just a natural thing about what can we do, community bonding events, and obviously poker is a great
They're
one.
Great.
Natural synergy. Me being a poker player, and so we started them out, and we've been running them for like 2 years now. And like throughout the last 8 months, we've been looking at all the initiatives we're doing and thinking about, should we keep doing that? Should we drop it? And poker was one of the ones that initially was like, maybe we should think about dropping it. You know, we get 20, 30 people maybe turning up. It's not, we have thousands of people in the community. It's not that big. But then we realized there are certain community members, they just show up to play poker, and like, that's how they engage with the community. And there's a sub community, and it doesn't cost much to run them. We give out a few prizes here and there, and it's very low effort and friction. So it's like, all right, we're going to keep them and, even double down on them and try and think about different ways to, bolster that part of the community. So, definitely they're staying.
Cool.
I love them. If you guys haven't tried them, go and check out Zen Academy. They run them every week or every couple of weeks.
Twice a week.
Oh wow! I didn't realize it was that.
Yeah,
often.
I'm missing tournaments. I'm missing tournaments.
Well, it's because of time zone, right? So we have different times for different people on the other side of the world. Yeah.
There's been a couple times where I'm like up late and I see the messages like tournament starting in 2 hours. I'm like, should I start playing a tournament at 3 a.m.? Probably not.
Yeah.
I'm sure the other players would really appreciate if you did.
Maybe not.
You'd be at your best at 3 a.m.
Maybe that's my golden zone. You don't know. Roy, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. I'd love to just maybe cap off with asking, you know, if people want to learn more about what you're doing, the educational content that you're creating, and more about Zen Academy, where should they go and what should they look for?
Best place is probably my Twitter account at this point, just at Zenica. And then I have a side.xyz page, and then it has all the links to like our NFT collections, our website, the other Zen Academy Twitter, everything, my newsletter. And so just go there, find that. And that's it.
Amazing. We'll put that in the show notes for people as well. So appreciate you joining. I'm glad we found a time zone that worked for you in Brisbane and us in the East Coast.
Always
tough. North America.
Yeah.
And we'll be happy to have you back on here anytime, or of course our Twitter spaces, which you've come to a few times as well. But thank you for being a leader and an educator in the space, and we appreciate what you do.
thank you both. I appreciate you for all you do in the space as well. Other builders, and thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Let's go. We're building.
Thanks,
we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
All right, bye, guys.